Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Steve Zwemke. From term limits in Pierre to the border, and that's what he said, we bring you the Dakota Political Junkies. We welcome former South Dakota lawmaker and member of the South Dakota Newspaper Hall of Fame, Noel Hamill, who joins us on the program today from the Black Hills Surgical Studio in Rapid City. Hey, Noel, how you doing?
Great to be here, Steve.
Wonderful. Great to have you. And from the campus of Northern State University in Aberdeen in the Tom and Danielle Ammon Foundation Studio, we welcome NSU Professor of Political Science and Department Chair John Schaff. Hi, John.
Hey, Steve. Good
great,
to be here.
Yeah, great to have you both back. I hope you had wonderful Christmas and New Year's breaks and back into the mix here on SDPB Radio. Let's go ahead and start with one of the stories that's been prevalent in the news over the last couple of days, and that's the war of words between President Trump and Massachusetts Senator and apparent presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren. That continues after the president used Twitter to criticize Warren, or her husband, rather, for wearing a headdress and saying that he should have been filmed wearing it at the site of Wounded Knee while being dressed in full Indian garb. John, is there anything that's being misunderstood or misconstrued here, or is this just bad no matter how it's spun?
It's difficult to put a positive spin on it, isn't it? The president, I don't know, he's a guy who tends to have grudges, and he seems to have one for some reason against Elizabeth Warren. And, you know, obviously Warren has this, shall we say, strange relationship with her supposed Native American heritage. Mm-hmm. Which I suppose is something that one could poke fun at a little bit, but maybe not something that the president needs to be poking fun at, certainly not as much as he seems to take a particular delight in tweaking Elizabeth Warren over this stuff. And it might be bad enough that you know, the president is kind of sinking to this level of humor, but then when he kind of drags in historical references that to a lot of Americans would be painful references and reduces them to humor, to as part of a joke. I guess I could imagine in some way in which that wouldn't be offensive, but I think it's certainly the case that a president of the United States probably shouldn't be engaging in that kind of humor.
Yeah, tweaking and tweeting.
It's, yes.
Noel, I'd like to kind of ask you the same question here, too. But we've already heard from people within our legislature and people that we respect throughout of, the state of South Dakota, both from tribes and outside of the tribes. And it's pretty hard to disagree with what they say. I mean, they feel it, and they're out there speaking against what the president had to tweet. Do you see anything that was maybe misconstrued, or do you pretty much agree with what John had to say?
Oh, the president's use of words that are inappropriate, sometimes inflammatory, is something that we've all witnessed and find offensive. You know, we saw during the campaign that, and since then, that he seems to find new ways to cast disparaging words on his critics. I find many of his comments offensive. But I think in this instance, I don't think that they do rise to the level of racist. Hmm. Let's remember that racism, by definition, is the belief that one race is superior to another. Merriam-Webster tells us that race, if you believe that race is the primary determinant of human traits and capacities and that those racial differences produce a superiority of a particular race, that's the definition. So when the president tweets about Senator Warren and involves incidents that are painful in our nation's consciousness, Wounded Knee and Little Bighorn, to use those incidents as part of his ridiculing Senator Warren, to me, was, even though it was insensitive and even offensive, was not racist. If you want examples of racism, I mean, in the news yesterday was Iowa Representative Stephen King's comments about mm-hmm. white nationalism. I mean, that's on its face racism. When Bill Maher compares the president to Adolf Hitler, whose racism is not in dispute, that's an example of a comparison that's unfair, but I think did an injustice to millions of Jews who were exterminated at the Nazi death camps. And again, these charges of racism is used all too often, I think, and it's a little out of place. I just think, again, the president's tweets can be over the top, they can be offensive, but I actually don't think that the tweets of yesterday met the definition of racism.
Interesting. The a couple of comments from our congressional delegation. Senator Mike Rounds says the Wounded Knee Massacre was one of the darkest moments in our history. It should never be used as a punchline. And from Representative Dusty Johnson, men, women, and children were massacred at Wounded Knee, leaving behind one of our nation's darkest stains. So just a couple of comments from members in Congress. I guess the bottom line would be we probably shouldn't be surprised by something like this from the president, should we?
Well, we agree with what our delegation said, and we think the president was over the top in using those incidents to mock Senator Warren. But to call him racist, I tend to, you know, look at words maybe a little more closely than some, and I think that word racist is misused quite a bit in today's highly political charged discourse.
Yeah, we do hear it on a daily basis. That is one thing for sure. Monday, the State House voted 55-13 on a resolution that supports a barrier at the southern border. Noel, I'd like to continue with you. What purpose does a resolution like this serve other than being a message of support for the president's plan to stand firm and secure the border with some sort of a wall or barrier?
Well, I think that is the resolutions don't have the force of law. They do send a message. I don't know. My guess is that a high percentage of South Dakotans, if they were voting, would vote to support some sort of barrier, metal, otherwise, to bring border security in those areas that need it. You're right. I mean, it doesn't have the force of law, but the legislature wanted to make a statement. I did note a couple lawmakers, one of whom I know pretty well, Craig Kennedy in Yankton, and also former Professor Ring of Vermilion, both voted against it. They said that it was just the wrong thing to do, but I think what the vote in the South Dakota legislature was cast was to support border security and legal immigration, and I think that was the point of it.
John, could a resolution like this, and I hate to sound cynical here, but could a resolution like this end up in a possible favor to South Dakota down the road, like money for a project or something like that?
Oh, I suppose potentially it would. I think probably in reality the effect of it is, if anything, is to send a signal maybe to our congressional delegation as to where the people of South Dakota stand. They probably already knew it. But maybe an attempt to, as you know, we're in pretty intense, I was going to say intense negotiations. Maybe the problem is there is no negotiation about the government shutdown, of which this border wall, fence, whatever you want to call it, is at the heart of it. And so any temptation by our delegation to compromise with Democrats and give up on such a structure, maybe a resolution like this maybe is intended to put a little steel in that spine. But I think mostly it's, you know, one of the things that legislators do is sometimes it's not legislation or, you know, policy making, but what we call simply position taking. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, kind of in the crudest sense, mere politics, is that you're signaling to your own constituents, this is what kind of person I am, Because, of course, it's non-binding. The state of South Dakota doesn't share a border with any international entity. No walls going to be built
here. Not until we combine with North Dakota, right?
Well, heaven forbid. So in that sense, you know, it has no policy impact. It's just sending a signal maybe to our delegation, and then legislators sending a signal to their own constituencies of this is sort of where I stand and where I'm at.
I'd like to ask both of you this question. What are you hearing from South Dakotans, especially in your communities of Rapid City and Aberdeen, on the effect of the partial shutdown? Are you seeing examples of people that are kind of in a dire situation right now? John, go ahead and take that.
Yeah, well, you know, a couple things. One is, you know, it's a relatively small part of the government is so-called shut down. And I think most of us in our day-to-day lives are seeing no effect, though I know people. One of my relatives here in Aberdeen who, you know, certain federal grants are being paid that they've applied for and they've gotten, but now the money isn't there to pay those grants, and it puts certain nonprofits in a tough situation if you've planned to have certain money coming in, and now it's not coming in, and there's no indication as to when it is going to come in. So I've seen it here in Aberdeen, and I'd imagine that they're all around the country, there are people in a similar position that as this drags on, things that at least, you know, it's not going to be big. Like I say, it's a relatively small part of the government that's shut down, but certain sectors as this drags on are going to start feeling more and more pain, and just one wonders if that's going to be significant enough to actually move anybody to compromise. Right now, I'm skeptical, but I maybe I'll be proven wrong.
Right. Noel, how about in the Rapid City area? Have you spoken with anybody or have noticed anything that has been related to the partial shutdown as far as people maybe suffering or anything like that?
Well, I wouldn't say suffering, but there have been, as John mentioned, there's efforts to, you know, help those who have been furloughed. Maybe through not just financial, but maybe food assistance. I mean, you know, yeah, it's the longest shutdown, but it hasn't, I don't believe it's reached those proportions where we would call it a crisis. I think most of the people I talk to out here, some of whom have been furloughed, are just frustrated by the fact that there seems to be an inability to find any common ground on this matter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's not the way it's supposed to work.
Yeah, it's a little difficult when people are walking out of rooms and going on junkets to Puerto Rico and things like that instead of coming together. I want to jump ahead a little bit. Some members of the legislature are pushing for 4-year terms instead of 2 for representatives and senators. House Majority Leader Lee Qualm says it would attract more committed candidates, and with 4-year terms, we'd have a stronger legislature. Noel, do you agree with that?
Not necessarily. It'd be easier on people who choose to run. It would be, you know, if you only had to run every 4 years instead of every 2 years, it would make it easier. I don't know that it would necessarily attract a broader spectrum of people. The advantage of running every 2 years is sort of like we see with our congressional delegation. You have to be very much in tune with your constituency. You have to stay on your toes. You have to know what your constituency wants. And I know it's been described as being in a campaign mode almost all the time. I think that is kind of true for congressional candidates. But I think the 2-year term forces lawmakers to be more responsive than would a 4-year term. I doubt that that's going to pass, but we'll see.
I certainly wouldn't question a politician's motive, but could this have anything to do with the large raise their lawmakers are benefiting from now?
Well, you know, they voted themselves, what was it, a 95% increase? And I realized they hadn't had an increase
right,
for many years. But I think the same argument that was used to justify that vote, which was, gee, if we double our salary, we will attract a broader range of people. The legislature would be more diverse. And yet, you know, really? Are you going to have a lot of people that will serve at 11.5 instead of 6,000 a year? Is that really going to make the difference, or was there something else at work?
Mm-hmm. John, your comments on this possible term limit change.
Well, I'm certainly in agreement with Noel. I doubt that it would get a different kind of legislator. Probably what you'd see, and I guess maybe I'm more supportive of this than Noel is that one of the problems with our two-year terms and then with term limits is that it promotes a regularity of turnover in the legislature mm-hmm. that strengthens both the executive branch and the lobbyists in peer, because that's where the lion's share of your institutional knowledge is. And, you know, we have a very part-time legislature and a full-time executive. And so the more you can strengthen that legislature, I think the better. If I was, you know, going to offer a friendly amendment, I'd say maybe senators would have four-year terms while keeping our two representatives from each district at 2 years. Mm-hmm. For one thing, it would promote a distinction between the two bodies that is probably healthy. And then you could have one chamber that's got at least a little bit longer term thinking, a little bit more stability, and then another chamber that is doing what Noel's talking about, that the purpose of it would be to be very responsive to the people, and therefore that 2 year term and that more continuous turnover would be, and the campaigning every 2 years would be much more helpful, and it's securing what you want out of the institution.
We have just about a minute left, Noel, but I'd like to ask this question. I would think right now at this point in time that would be something members of the Democratic Party, especially those serving in peer, would be very much against, as they're still trying to find some traction in these elections we've been having.
Well, I'm not sure about that. I did want to say that I thought John makes a couple of excellent points on continuity and maybe setting up some differentiation between the two bodies. I think most South Dakotans probably look at the legislature and say, you know, it's been working pretty well. They like the idea of a part-time legislature. They like the efficiency of it. They like the balanced budgets. But there are some points worth considering. As far as would a four-year term help Democratic candidates, I just don't see that. I think the challenge for the Democrats in most districts is just finding strong candidates and the support that they need to get elected.